On episode 241, I'm interviewing Lotte Twock, experienced UX researcher for many large companies, including Google. But first, a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by HubUX. HubUX is a productivity tool for qualitative research. It creates a seamless workflow across your tools and team. Originally came up with the idea as I was listening to research professionals in both the quant and qual space complain about and articulate the pain, I guess more succinctly, around managing qualitative research. The one big problem with qualitative is it's synchronous in nature, and it requires 100% of the attention of the respondent. This creates a big barrier and, I believe, a tremendous opportunity inside of the marketplace. So what we do is we take the tools that you use, we integrate them into a workflow so that ultimately you enter in your project details, that is, who it is that you want to talk to and when you want to talk to them, whether it's a focus group in person or virtual or IDIs or ethnos. And we connect you to those right people in the times that you want to have those conversations or connections. Push button qualitative insights. HubUX, if you have any questions, reach out to me directly. I would appreciate it. Jamin at HubUX.com. Hi, I'm Jamin, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. My guest today is Lotte Twock, an experienced UX researcher consultant for many of the top brands, including Google. Lotte, thanks very much for being on the Happy Market Research Podcast today.
Hi, Jamin. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start out with, before we get into the meat of our conversation, with providing our listeners some context of who you are, you know, where you're based, and how you wound up in user experience research.
I'm based in Lagos, Nigeria. There are not a lot of UX researchers here. So I was studying psychology in the University of Lagos. And as a student, I had a lot of time on my hands. And my school is based in a major city where there's a tech hub. And tech hub was really close to my school. So I used to just go there and go for all the meetups I could find because I had nothing else to do. And so I discovered Usable, which was UX Lagos at the time, a design meetup that happened every month. And so I just attended because I was more interested. I had tried software front-end development. So I learned HTML and CSS and a little bit of JavaScript on Codecademy, because I really wanted to work in tech. That was like my major goal. And so I didn't really enjoy that. So I enjoyed the meetups and topics and everything. And so an opportunity came up in the company where the meetup was hosted for a UX researcher, their first UX researcher, and they wanted somebody with a psychology background. And so I sent in my CV, had an interview, and voila.
If only it was magical, right? I mean, there's a lot to that. User experience meetups are becoming more and more common. It's interesting to see how, you know, they're playing out globally. Of course, yourself in Nigeria is really interesting. Are you seeing meetups as something that has been around a lot for a long time inside of our industry, or is it more of a new phenomenon?
So I can't say for like all over the world, but as far as I can tell, there were a lot of meetups in these parts. Usable is about 5 years old. And in that time, a lot more have come up for developers, designers, mostly for developers, I think. I think at most of the meetups for developers or entrepreneurs and business owners. And there was not like a lot being done about designers, but not and other people who are involved in tech and creating products and selling those products. But now there are a lot more meetups. There are digital marketing meetups, there are content meetups, so I also started this, it's not really huge, it's just like a small quarterly meetup for UX researchers. So more meetups as the industry here grows and more roles come up and people are starting to pay attention to the other things involved, more meetups are coming up and people are doing, meeting people offline, because most of the, which is a major challenge I have faced here, is that there are not a lot of people for me to look to for guidance or advice. Most of the help I get is from international Slack communities and on Twitter and basically online. But so really, now there's more of that presence here.
Yeah, and on that topic, what is your Twitter handle?
I think I'll just have to spell it.
Okay. I tell you what, we'll do this. We will link to your Twitter handle inside of the show notes. I know there's a lot of people that are going to want to connect with you. So this is interesting, sort of that blur between physical or versus virtual, right? I recently was at Google's campus in conjunction with the AMA moderating a panel and out of San Francisco. And in that panel, you make a lot of human connections, right? So in person. And then it's interesting how you see that evolution in a digital framework, like those relationships really blossom. So I think that meetups play an important role. The problem with meetups, especially if you're not in a major metropolitan area, is you have very small or non-existent communities. So tapping into those and finding those individuals can be really hard. But that's where if you like put the effort in, just starting it, eventually you will build that community. It just takes a little, you have to have patience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Because I remember when I started going to Usable like about 2 months after it had started, and we were barely 20 people. But now a Usable meetup averages are like 80 people per meetup. And it's on a work day in a very traffic ridden city. So that's like a lot of people. And I'm pretty sure if it was, and this is feedback that we get, because now I'm part of the organizers of Usable. Yay. So then the feedback that we get often is that, it's because it's on Thursday, I can't come because I work on the island, I live on the mainland. And there's like, the Lagos has an island part and a mainland part, and there's like so much traffic and people don't like to do that journey. So even for my little UX researcher hangout that I just started, and it's every quarter, the first meetup were about 6 people and the last one were about 15 people. And this is all this year. So as people become more aware and people become more interested, the numbers increase, people show up more, and then it keeps growing that way. Yeah. But then again, there's the concern of where you live, which is why like I really love online spaces. Because if there were no international Slack groups, I wouldn't have made a lot of the connections that I have made so far.
Yeah, activity inside of Slack for your specific discipline is really, really important, whether it's market research or UX. It used to be the case that we relied on message boards as a way for us to be able to connect. And that still is being used today. But the majority of the conversations are now happening in, whether it's Google groups or Slack communities. It is really neat to see I'm a member of a couple, a research operations Slack community and then a Bay Area user experience Slack. And it's interesting how there's so much activity, there, whether it's needs or mentorship or, one personal post. Recently we had crowdsourced basically among the group of the 100 most common user experience terms. And then we created a definition against those terms, which is, a foundational piece of work when you think about that, because that's something that we can then, as, more broadly start pushing and just kind of the way that we talk about our disciplines. So let's talk a little bit about user experience research and some context for yourself. My background's in primary market research. User experience research, as a job function when I started my career really didn't exist, not in its current framework anyway. It's because I'm old. But you've really seen over the last, I want to say 6 to 7 years, a massive investment in organizations against the user experience researcher job function. And that job function sits outside of market research, which again, I think is really interesting. So it'd be helpful for us, the audience, myself included, if you would just spend a little bit of time talking about what the role is of user experience researchers in a modern brand.
So I think I would mostly refer to I think Jared's poll on maturity, on UX maturity. And then that's in terms of like the role that the UX researcher plays. And it depends on the awareness that they have, the company has, about what UX research really is. Because for some people, UX research is just usability testing or it's just surveys. And they don't think about like the other things that exist, ethnography, field research, diary studies, and all those other things. And I'm going to mostly speak from my perspective being here in Nigeria. I can't say for other places. But when I first started, most people, and myself included, understood UX research as usability studies and interviews and focus groups, mostly. That's what most people did. And then as I connected with people in other Slack groups, I mean like 25 Slack groups. As I connected with all these people, I started to learn more and started to see beyond those three. And in my first job, when I started, I only knew three methods. But by the time I finished, because of all these other groups, I was working with about 5 or 6 different methods. And then moving to another company, being able to do more field work was a different perspective. So I would say that it really just depends on, in terms of the role, there's a huge requirement where you as a researcher have to be the driving force in terms of what you do. Because most people, especially in this side, are just starting to have an understanding of what UX research is and why it's important and why they should do it and when they should do it. So it's very hard to find mentorship. So it's really up to you to push for the breadth that you would like to work with. And then in terms of where UX research sits in teams, I mean, different companies have it in different places. So in some of the Slack groups, I mean, this conversation has come up so many times. And some people say that some companies have UX researchers sit with different product teams, but you can only do that when you have enough researchers. If you have 10 products and you have only one researcher, you have to have the researcher like center servicing the other team. So in my first job, I was working at a consultancy that had an incubator and an accelerator. So I was on a design team that was servicing the startups in the incubator and the accelerator, as well as external clients and for any projects that the company was collaborating with other people to create. So that was one structure. And then it was the same way in my next full-time job, where my design team combined brand design, product design, UX design. So there were about 12 or 13 of us servicing all the product teams. So it depends on the company and their existing structure. But most of the companies that I know here put UX, there's not always a UX research role. Usually the designer does it, and it's usually usability testing or interviews. But it will usually be situated in a central team that services kind of like an internal consultancy team that services the rest of the other team. It's very rare that you have a researcher per product or per team. Very, very, I don't think that it would exist here, as far as I know.
Yeah, and that's centric to maybe the geography or the types of companies, right? So like there's a number of, you know, really all the large companies that are in the technology field at this point have dedicated user experience researchers in-house, usually sitting next to product. I'm really interested though in this evolution of, you know, of your, I'll call it like tools in your toolbox, you know, user experience researcher tools that you develop or learned about and then developed through the connections you made in Slack channels. Like, can you describe one of your favorite ones that you, tools or skills that you acquired and then have been using?
Definitely ethnography, field research. So I think mostly because I didn't have as I was just starting out then, and I was still trying to find my footing. And so because it was kind of easy for me to transition from doing psychology research to doing UX research, because the methods are pretty, in some ways, similar. And in terms of how do you facilitate a session or facilitate a focus group, because we had all the practical sessions in school. We would do practice counseling sessions and practice focus group sessions. So those things were easily able to translate. And I guess that's why it was easy for me to hold on to those three first, the interview, focus group, and individuality test. So it was like very easy transition. And those ones were the ones that the people I worked with were familiar with. And so it was easy to start with that. And as somebody who was just starting out newly in the whole field, not just at my job, it was kind of difficult for me to see where and how to introduce new methods. So it was only later on that I was able to do that. But the one I'm most excited about is ethnography. And this, I was able to really explore on a different job. I went to a different country, Kenya, to do field research for the financial services company I was working for at the time. And it was a very interesting project because I was leading the whole thing from planning to analysis, and it involved the people in the Kenya office and the Nigeria office. And it was very interesting again because when we got there, we realized that we hadn't planned for translators for when we went to the outskirts of town, because Swahili is spoken more in those areas than in the central business district. Most of the research was in the business district because we were talking to banks and telecommunication companies, so we didn't have the language problem until we went outside. Thankfully, we had people on the team who spoke Swahili, and so they served as translators for the session.
That's such a terrifying, you know, situation where you're actually in the field. The client wants to move from a, you know, metropolitan into rural areas, and then you have this whole like cultural / language transition that also occurs. You know, there's so much effort that goes into the actual operations of research, and you know, having to pull those audibles. It's actually a big part of, I think, a successful researcher is their ability to be crafty with and nimble while they're actually in field to make sure they get the right people with, you know, the points of view that are important.
Yeah, I agree with that. So like, I feel a lot of the time you plan research and you dot all your I's and cross all your T's, and then there's always something that just surprises you that you didn't remember to plan for, or that just comes up in the middle of everything, and then you have to just be really quick and think of something to do. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Or you find out that you recruited the wrong participant in the middle of the session. Like,
oh, that's hilarious. I've seen that so many times. One time I was doing a project with, these were in-depth interviews, and one project was for I'm trying to think of how I can say it without disclosing too much, but it was basically in a medical field. And so this physician who had been vetted and was an expert in this particular field came in and, you know, did the interview, and everything was great. And then, I'm not kidding, it was like 8 hours later. So that was a morning. This is an evening session. And it was the same guy came in for a different project, but inside of a different field of study. And I was just terrified because I'm like, hey, how did this happen? You got to figure it out, you know. And that's, unfortunately, we had double recruited, but it was not my favorite moment. Anyway, okay, so you know, you're a recent grad. I think you graduated in 2018. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. So Nigeria being Nigeria, so people in the academic staff of universities go strike, and then you're in school longer than you should be. But I actually finished my exams 2017. I'm in class of 2017. Okay. But then we didn't graduate until 2018.
Well, I mean, at least you have a legitimate reason. I think in the US it's prolonged just because of the beer consumption, but that might be a different
that might be more fun, different podcast.
Diversity is in design specifically, is this growing movement. And I mean, we're seeing diversity across the board, whether it's like startup founders or board of directors or C-level executives or management or et cetera, et cetera. But we know that diversity is important. What are some advantages from your perspective that diversity gives organizations?
So I think that it definitely gives you, in terms of just even perspective, right? Like, how do people experience the world? And especially if you're building a product, if you're offering a service, like the people who are using your product or service are very diverse. So your team should reflect that, because you then miss things if you don't do that. I was recently watching a TED talk by, I can't remember her name now, but she has a condition. I don't know what the word, I don't know if this is politically correct, but I think it's called dwarfism. And she was talking about how she can't like access anything, especially when she travels. She needs help when she travels and uses airports because like nobody designed airports for people that experience this. And even with accessible bathrooms are not designed for people with her condition. So it's very easy to say you can walk in people's shoes, but you really 100% can't. You always need somebody with that perspective, because it's very different to have a lived experience than to watch somebody's lived experience or to hear about somebody's lived experience. It's very different from actually being there and living that life. So having people diverse, even culturally, abilities, all in many different ways, helps you create products that actually work for everybody. So also, there was a time about 2 years ago, I think, where Apple released their health thing on their apps, but it didn't track cycles.
Interesting.
And women use this. Like, how do you have a health thing that doesn't track menstrual cycles? Which is like, people who... So like, having, if I'm not, I don't know what their team was made up of, but then it, and that also goes to that, it goes beyond like having those people in the room. It also, do they actually have a voice when they're in the room? So I imagine maybe there was somebody there who could have said something, but maybe it felt like they couldn't say something. So it just, it goes beyond just like having people in the room. Do they know that they can voice, they can use their voices, or are they just in the room because they feel like, oh, let's put them in the room so people won't say we don't have a diverse team?
How interesting. It's like almost like an authentic seat at the table as opposed to more of a ceremonial seat at the table. And you know, again, this is such a, I hate jumping on this bandwagon, but I feel like it's such an important point. What I mean by, and let me clarify what my point is there. Like, it's been an obvious hole inside of corporate America and at a global level as well, that, you know, now all of a sudden we're seeking, or the industries are seeking people to fill these roles to offer the diverse perspectives. And they're actually having challenges finding the right, you know, finding the right populations that can, you know, create the level of diversity. And so one of the things that I found that's really interesting is successful companies, that is ones that are putting real effort towards this, they're actually recruiting up chain. So they're investing at the college level and even in some cases at the high school level so that they can get good socioeconomic diversity funneled through the educational system so that when they do graduate, there is a pool of people that they can, you know, they can subsequently hire, as opposed to it being more of an afterthought of, oh, wow, I need a salesperson right now, or I need a product person right now. And, you know, these are the first 100 applicants and just combing through the sea of the non-diverse segments, which I represent.
So another thing that just came to mind now was like, so here in Nigeria, a lot of banks don't have wheelchair ramps. And it's just like, if you had somebody who is a wheelchair in your bank, working in your bank, you would know that, oh, we should design our bank branches with wheelchair ramps. It's like one example of how, even because you see people on wheelchairs every day, but you don't think that, oh, maybe they also use the bank.
Yeah, but no, you're right.
When you have somebody who works in the bank, then you see that, oh, yeah, we should have this. Why don't we have this?
I have a good friend of mine, Mark Melabon, and he's paralyzed from the waist down, and he's a programmer for Decipher, which is a survey platform. Anyway, I remember we moved the company into a new building and it was compliant with the, you know, building codes, but it actually, the overall accessibility was just not designed or optimal for people in wheelchairs. So, you know, because of that relationship, there was just no question about it, right? It had to, things had to be designed in a way that, you know, it's like my co-founder, Matt Tim, he goes, what if it was your kid? That's literally how his question. he comes out of the whole accessibility side of things. Anyway, it's a longer story. But yeah, you know, designing workspaces for blind people is his, you know, one of his last startups. So it is interesting how you can forget about, it's almost like, it's not intentional. It's just the way we're wired as humans. You know, if we're not encountering that challenge, our assertion is that challenge doesn't exist or we forget about it, right? And so that's where I think the strength of diversity is. If you can connect your, you know, product to everybody, not just, you know, the people that look like you, then you offer a much broader whole product to the marketplace, which the benefit of that is obviously breadth and reach. So, you know, it's more meaningful and it's hitting a wider audience, which is a great competitive moat if you want to think about it from a financial perspective. All right. So in 2018, we're just going to kick this horse a little bit more. Sorry about my colloquialism. 2018, you wrote a Medium article titled Creating a Community for Women in Design. And then you introduced She Designs. Tell us a little bit about She Designs and, you know, what your kind of what the problem was and what you're hoping to solve there.
So Usable actually is what led me to She Designs. So I noticed that at the meetups we have like sometimes 100 people, sometimes 80 people, and then in the whole crowd we'll have maybe 5 women, 6. And so I just felt like I don't think is that they're not women designers. Maybe because of the timing, maybe we're not reaching where they are. I didn't know what to do. And so I decided to talk to a couple of people that I knew and to see what was really, like, is it that they're not enough women? If that's the issue, how can we get more women? Is it that they're women, but we don't know where they are? How can we find them? Is it that they're women, but they don't feel like they're experience enough to come out and talk or to meet people or whatever, like what really is the issue? So I put out a tweet asking for women designers in Nigeria. And so I spoke to, I did a couple of, I user researched. So I did, I had conversations with all of, with like, not all of them, because it was like a lot of people who filled the form, with about 10, 15 of them. And then I had another kind of like focus group in the beginning of last year. So the form and tweet went out in like 2017, the like middle of 2017. And so January 2018, I think, I had like a focus group, about 4 people came. And so from there, we drew up like what She Designed will be about and what it will be, what the core of the group will be. And so because I didn't want to just do another meetup, right? Because there are like lots of meetups. So I wanted it to actually like be valuable beyond just, meetups are valuable definitely because like I got my start from going to meetups. So, but I wanted it to be more and to actually provide value and to be like, what's the difference between this and any other meetup? And so we did our first event the May of that year. And so we decided that the goals for She Designs would be the threefold. One is to train people, to train women on the various aspects of design. So we're looking beyond visual design, UX, research, content, everything that goes into creating product. And because of that, we're starting to think of maybe including product management, but that's like something that we're thinking about. But for now, the focus is visual design, UX design, research, and content. And then that's one. The second one is for people to collaborate. So we wanted to create a space for women designers to collaborate, create things, work on projects, and all of that. And then the third one was to help people develop, women to develop their quote-unquote soft skills. So things like public speaking, encourage more women to speak publicly, write about the work that they're doing. But all those kinds of things so that we have well-rounded designers, right? Because a lot of designers can create, but they can't talk about their work. They can't speak in public.
Right.
So just to cover all the bases.
So it's functioning as a, obviously an aware, opportunity awareness, but then subsequently, you know, growth in terms of like mentorship and training. Are there many workshops at a paid level locally?
In general, I don't know of that many paid workshops. He's even recently started doing workshops. Some are paid, some are free. But for She Designs, we tried to do a course based off of the ideal HCD framework. But then we've done it like three times now. We've tried to do it three times. And each time we learn something new. So the first time, the issue was that it was too long. It was supposed to run for 6 weeks. And it was too long. People were dropping off. Attention span wasn't there. And then the second time, it was that people were, they had other jobs, like they had full-time jobs, and so they didn't have time to commit. And then the third time, yeah, so people weren't following the schedule because, again, we're trying to check in, call, do weekly calls, do weekly check-ins, send emails, but people weren't responding. So we were back to the drawing board trying to figure out how to actually make it work so that it's beneficial to everybody because we put a lot of time and effort into it and it wasn't getting the desired results. Another thing I'm thinking of that we're trying to do is to, something I've noticed about designers in general is that most people don't really know how to collaborate. They don't know how to work with other people, especially developers. So like designers are in their little corner and the developers are in their own corner. So we're trying to do a collaboration with organizations that teach women to code so that we can sort of simulate like working, like a real work environment where you're not just designing in your corner, you're working with other people on a team. And which is why our challenges are usually team-based, because we want people to be able to collaborate and be able to work with other people when creating. So they're not just, because that's in, when you're working, you're probably not just going to sit down by yourself and come up with something. You're right. Probably going to work with somebody else. So we're trying to make that, make it as realistic as possible, as reflective of real life as possible.
Yeah.
And not just,
I think that's,
oh, I can design now.
Yeah. That's a really important point, right? Is you've got to not just cultivate or develop the skills of research, but you also have to successfully figure out and navigate the personal interactions, the, you know, the how you and when you engage with people so that projects are ultimately successful. Because we can do the absolute most brilliant research in the world, but if we haven't built the relationships and figured out how to collaborate with our customers internally, then it really doesn't matter. That ability is probably as big or bigger than, you know, the other side of the equation, but you really have to have both.
Yeah.
My last question, which I has turned into one of my favorites, what is your personal motto?
I was hoping you would ask me this because I don't think I have a personal motto because I always feel like whatever I'm thinking depends on the context I'm in and where my life is at and like in that particular moment. But I think, so in terms of work, I would say my personal motto in terms of work is do great work, do interesting things, and then talk about it. Because I don't believe in the whole silent genius working away and everybody acknowledges your genius because you're such a genius. I feel like you have to talk about what you do and show people that you actually know. So it's not just talk, but like do great work and then talk about it. Exactly. That's for work. But then in, I think my general life motto is just have fun. Life is long. Life can be long and life can be short. But whatever it is, have fun. Like with whatever you're doing.
Perfect. My guest today has been Lottie Tawak, UX researcher extraordinaire. I'm very honored to have you on the podcast today, Lottie. Thank you so much for joining me.
So glad to have done this. Thank you.
Everyone else, if you found value in this episode, please take time, screen capture, share it on social media. If you tag us, we'd greatly appreciate it. We hope you have a fantastic rest of your day. This episode is brought to you by HubUX. HubUX is a productivity tool for qualitative research. It creates a seamless workflow across your tools and team. Originally came up with the idea as I was listening to research professionals in both the quant and qual space complain about and articulate the pain, I guess more succinctly, around managing qualitative research. The one big problem with qualitative is it's synchronous in nature and it requires 100% of the attention of the respondent. This creates a big barrier and I believe a tremendous opportunity inside of the marketplace. So what we do is we take the tools that you use, we integrate them into a workflow so that ultimately you enter in your project details, that is, who it is that you want to talk to and when you want to talk to them, whether it's a focus group in person or virtual or IDIs or ethnos, and we connect you to those right people in the times that you want to have those conversations or connections. Push button qualitative insights. HubUX, if you have any questions, reach out to me directly. I would appreciate it. Jamin@hubux.com. Have a great rest of your day.